Dr. J. Andy Elias, I'm your host, and today we have an amazing journey. We are going to be speaking with Dr. David Jacobs, Professor Emeritus from Temple University, who has decades-long experience with alien abductees. Before we do that, though, I want to give you guys all a little schedule update. Next Thursday, which will be April 25th, we are going to have April 18th, I'm sorry, Stephen Bassett, who's going to be doing the citizens hearing, which is going to be a quasi-congressional hearing where former military brass, former intelligence agencies and researchers are going to be testifying in front of retired congressmen, retired senators, you name it, and it's going to be at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. He's going to be telling us all about it in the push for disclosure to end this truth embargo. Then, the following week, on the 25th, we're going to speak with Mr. Richard Dolan. He's got a few amazing books. One of them that put him on the map was UFOs in the National Security State. And we expect that book, or we expect that lesson that day with him was going to be a very, very good show, because this guy is basically, I don't want to compare him to another name, but he is actually, pushing on forward and brought a good new light, you know, to this UFO disclosure. The following week, we're also going to have the May 2nd, we're going to have Jordan Maxwell. So those are the next three shows for everybody. Remember, next week, next Thursday, the 18th, we're going to have Stephen Bassett. The 25th, we're going to have Mr. Dolan, Richard Dolan. And May 2nd, we're going to have Jordan Maxwell. Now, also, I also want to let everyone know, give shout outs to Third Phase of Moon out there. The Cousins Brothers are working real hard to get all that footage out there for the whole world to see. And what we're going to do is, before Dr. David Jacobs comes on, we're going to be talking about some of the greatest footage that's been submitted to us lately. Blake just lost us, but we're going to try to get him back here shortly. In the meantime, for all of those out there who have any footage of a UFO or footage of an alien being, we have a contest going on. We want to see your footage. If you have anything regards to UFOs, please send it to us via Skype on Third Phase of Moon. Spell it out. THIRDPHASEOFMOON. All one word, Third Phase of the Moon. Find us on Skype. And it's two categories. The first for the top UFO, and the second one is going to be for an alien entity, a ghost, an interdimensional being, anything you want. But when you do, make sure you say it's for Revolution Radio Contest. That way you guys, the winners, will be eligible to pick from any one of Preston Dennett's 15 books, and it'll be a signed copy directly to you. Now, without further ado, we are going to bring on the one and only man, Blake Cousins, who's responsible for pushing this footage that we get from around the world for the whole world to see. Blake Cousins, are you there?
I'm right here, Dr. John Andy Elias. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Blake. I was just telling everybody about that we have some great new footage, and I was hoping, you know, you could tell us what's new on Third Phase of the Moon.
Well, you know, we have some breaking news. I wanted to say we just got done with an incredible interview with Richard Dolan, and his insight is vast, and it was an insightful interview we just did, and we're putting up the whole video on Third Phase of the Moon, hopefully tonight, and it's going to be amazing. We're working on that right now, and we're working on the new footage of the video that we just released on Third Phase of Moon yesterday. UFO sightings, dead alien baby found, alien skeleton discovery, shocking update 2013. Everybody should go to Third Phase of Moon right now on YouTube. Take a look at this incredible video of what appears to be some kind of alien underneath a house.
Blake, I gotta say, again, for all you listeners out there, make sure you find it on YouTube. Spell it out, all one word, Third Phase of Moon, THIRDPHASEOFMOON. And look at the latest video, which Blake just said is of an alien. Guys, I gotta tell you, I checked this out for myself, and this could be the one body that we need to prove to everybody. The skeleton looks so Okay, I don't know how to describe it, but it's got the giant head. It's got the eyes, which are very inconsistent with anything else, definitely far from human or any other animal that I can figure out. We also have, on top of that, we also have several other things, but that footage of that gray itself is about, I don't know, 2-3 feet, maybe 4 feet long. How would you estimate it, Blake?
You know, it's hard to tell from the angle. We're not saying we know exactly what it is. The man that shot it himself seemed a little disturbed when he filmed it, found this underneath his home in kind of a crawl space. It looks to be maybe about, you know, maybe 12 inches to 24 inches long, and we're in contact with him. He is going down in the basement, get a closer look today, and he's going to get us some close-up photos and video, and we're hoping it is what it appears to look like, a real alien gray skull remains left behind. And, you know, we're just hoping he gets the new footage and it turns out to be what it really is. I don't know what it is. It looks to be unlike any other, you know, life, or, you know, people say it's a cat, it's a raccoon. It does not look like a cat or a raccoon remains. It looks very, you know, similar to, you know, Dr. Greer coming out with his new documentary, Sirius. And, you know, I think this is the best thing that's come out, and we're breaking it before even the, you know, the movie is released.
You know, and I got to tell you, Blake, and all you listeners out there, I concur with you. Some other people, you know, one of my friends actually said, oh, that's a possum. It's not. Look at the facial features of the skeleton. And this looks identical to several other supposed gray alien skulls that were found randomly around the Earth. One of them that was in the catacombs of the Vatican. I mean, that's just explosive. If this skeleton matches the same exact skull of that, which is purported to be of a gray alien, we have the smoking gun, and it's on third phase of moon. For all you out there, we strongly suggest you check it out.
Exactly. You know, we get the footage, we put it out there, it just came in, we looked at it, we went over it, we had no idea what it was. We're not the guys that decide whether this is real or not. We're putting it out there, and we're letting the people decide and make their own judgments. We're just kind of the transparent non-filter feeding this out so the world gets to see. I also want to talk about, you know, this incredible video. It's gone viral. It's, you know, quite amazing. I think it's the first time in history that it looks to be a possible flying saucer diving in, actually carving in to the ocean to possibly, you know, maybe an underground alien base. But it was captured off Guam. Apparently the water there is, you know, it drops to depths of miles within, you know, 100 yards, a few hundred yards off the coast. Who knows what's going on? But what do you think of the footage, John, when you looked at this for the first time?
Oh, Blake, I got to tell you, when I saw it, to me, it was the first of its kind. What other object comes in at such a high speed, 5 to 10 feet above the water, actually morphs into a very stretched out 2.5 to 3 times the size of the length, and then flattens out, and just before it enters the water, it gets back in that familiar dome shape. Then it hits the water with such high capacity, but the splash is not as explosive as you would expect it. And then it changes the 45 degree angle to go parallel with the water, and as you see it zipping away. Blake, I think that is one of the best videos of all time. And you recall, Blake, I'm going to tell the listeners out there what we did this past weekend. We went out, we found a whole lot of people that were at an event, and we showed them this footage. A lot of them didn't want to be on camera, and a lot the ones that did, we got on camera. We showed them all the footage. We let them pause it. We let them rewind it. We let them see it close up as much as they wanted to, and not a single person did not say that this is probably one of the greatest pieces of footage that they have seen of a UFO. Blake, I commend you for getting that. And whoever out there sent it, we really hope that you guys step forward and give us more details. I know you guys want to remain anonymous because of this, but if it isn't for people like Blake and Brent Cousins and this radio show and the radio station Revolution to push these things out there for the world to see uncensored and unfettered, we wouldn't be getting where we are.
you know, we tried to get Skype interviews with a couple that caught it. They're simple fishermen. They're out there fishing, and then they started to look at some of the comments that comes through. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people that don't know what they're talking about, or they're confused. And you know, when they speak about things they're not aware of, usually they come out with, you know, harsh statements, and you know, they kind of discourage the people coming forward. We're still trying to get these people to come and say, hey, look, everybody's got an opinion. Don't take it personally. Let's just tell the story, you know, get the interviews, and, you know, we want to hear more of exactly what happened that day. I want everybody, you know, like John says, come to the YouTube Third Phase of the Moon and take a look at this crashed UFO in the water, or it actually maybe entered the water into an underground base. It's named UFO Sightings, UFO Crash Caught on Video, Impact Flying Saucer, Close-Up Footage. Everybody take a look at it. And we want people to call in, right, John?
That's right. We want to get your comments right here live on air while we got Blake Cousins on air. Live here, prime time to the world. Call in, area code 347-688-2902. Once again, that's area code 347-688-2902. We look forward to hearing from everybody, both sides, any comment. And Blake, it seems we got a caller here. Let's add him in and see who this is. Hi, caller, what's your name and where are you calling from? Hello? Caller.
Yeah, this is our brother Scout Rev. We've been on a couple of your broadcasts and we talked to some of the members like Deacon John, and we were able to get information out about the situation in Lakewood, Jefferson County, Colorado. And we understand this isn't Revolution Radio, even though it says you've dialed Revolution Radio.
No, this is Revolution Radio. Today is our primetime debut of the Third Phase of Moon at this time. But listen in on the show, my friend. You're going to have a great time. We're talking about some of the greatest things. And when Dr. David Jacobs comes on, he's going to be talking about the alien threat.
You know what I want to talk about? The threat right now, John, is we talked to Richard Dolan about the Kim Jong-un threat and, you know, possible nuclear strike on the U.S. and right here where I live in Hawaii. And I asked him if there would be possible maybe intervention from aliens in, you know, to stop something like this. Dick Cheney said we're in deep doo-doo. So, you know, what do you think about that? Are the aliens going to help out and stop a nuclear war?
You know, there are two sides to this camp. One side says, yes, there will never be another nuclear attack on the whole Earth, on the whole world, because they say that aliens are going to step in and prevent it. The other thing, though, is that people say that there's this galactic federation and aliens are not allowed to step in and involve themselves with our, you know, progression. So I don't know what to believe. But on one hand, we do have several retired military men who were in the Air Force. One of them is a famous one from Malmstrom Air Force Base. I don't know his rank, but it was Robert Salas. And he said that when he was on base, a UFO came and shut down all the ICBMs with nuclear missile heads. Another case is another Robert Jacobs. He was also in the U.S. Air Force. They filmed a launch of an ICBM, and then after they watched the video, a UFO came traveling at 18,000 miles, the same speed as the missile, shot a beam, went around the other side of the object, shot another beam, went around again, shot a third beam, and boom. The missile exploded. So if you take that into consideration, Blake, I really think that it's possible that they might step in. But then again, which camp do you believe? That's the thing.
That is absolutely the question. You know, we just recently released Best UFO Documentary, UFOs Over Hawaii. And there's so many sightings here in Hawaii. I think there's something going on. And if Kim Jong-un wants to, you know, try and hit the state, I possibly think there's going to be some intervention, because I'm thinking the aliens really find this state something special, being out in the middle of the Pacific.
You know, I'm really worried about Kim Jong-un, because, you know, He has something to prove. His father and his grandfather were very sturdy, and he feels that because he's such a young age, you know, we don't even know how old he is. Speculation is he's 28 to 32 because that's how much of a hermit kingdom North Korea is. And because of that, we can't really find, we don't know what hospital, we don't know what year, we don't know, we don't have his birth certificate. So it's just speculation. He could even be a little younger than that for all we know. But what we do know is that this man has made more threats to launch a nuclear missile to the U.S. than his father and his grandfather. Now, also, Blake, I must say that just today, as a matter of fact, just a couple of hours ago, President Barack Obama called in or made a speech and basically said that if there was, if the diplomatic relations could not stop this North Korea crisis, then he will do any steps, take any steps necessary to stop the threat, for, to protect America and our allies.
All right, folks, got the Nighthawk here, Revolution Radio. I'm going to pick it up and produce the show. Pierce, John's having some internet issues. I think we got – who all
this is Blake.
Got? Okay, we got Blake and another area code. Go ahead and take it away.
All right, cool. Hey, we don't know what happened, some kind of blackout. We're talking about Kim Jong-un. Maybe there's some higher intervention that didn't want to, you know, us talking about that. We'll just move on to the next subject matter. We are going to be taking calls – a call from a Dr. Jacobs, hypnotic regression expert. He's done over 900 interviews with alien abductees. The stories all basically seem to come together as that there's something really going on. There are possible, you know, 3 to 4 million abductions happening in the United States alone. We think those are high numbers. The government should, you know, tell us what's really going on here in the U.S. How do we take calls here? I'm operating from an unknown source on this radio.
I'm taking the calls for you. You do have area code 215 on the line.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and take area code 215, and we'll find out who's calling in to Third Phase of the Moon.
We got it going back. Sorry about that. We had some technical difficulties, which are unexplainable at this point, but thank God it's all going here. And Dr. Jacobs?
Yeah, this is
long. I'm sure.
Excellent, excellent. I guess with no further ado, Blake, since you've been on, I might as well have you go ahead and start with Dr. David Jacobs.
All right, this is Dr. Jacobs. Thanks for joining us right here at Third Phase of Moon.
No, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, great, great. I really enjoyed the last interview we had, and we were going into, you know, the theory that, you know, all these stories that come together through your hypnotic regressions is that they have something similar going on. You in the beginning you're quite skeptical about these stories, but now you have a different, you know, angle, the way you think about what's really going on. Could you tell us when you came to the revelation that, you know, there's something beyond that these stories are all in common?
Well, I had actually been a UFO researcher starting in my early 20s, and but I didn't believe in abductions. I didn't think there was much to it because UFOs are really the place to be. That was where all the evidence was. That's where the films were. That's where the tapes were. That's where the photographs were. That's where the ground compaction tests were, you know, the priest, the minister, and the rabbi seeing an object on the ground, run throwing a rock at it, and all that sort of stuff. With abductions, you're dealing primarily with memory. And then that's a very, very iffy situation. And so I stayed away from it for a long time. But by 1982, I met Bud Hopkins, who was the great abduction researcher in those days, and was until his death in 2011. And he convinced me, showed me that there was something to this, and I started doing hypnotic regression with abductees in 1986. And it did not take me long to realize that this was far more complex and far more, there was far more substance to it than I ever imagined. And I've looked at now 1,500 different abduction events with about 150 people, and I've conducted about 1,000 abduction regressions with them over the years. I mean, a whole bunch only come once, and some stay for 100 sessions and whatever. But the point is that what you're looking at here is, as I warn everybody, it's human memory recovered through hypnosis administered by amateurs like me, for example. And so when you're dealing with just the purity of the testimony, it's about as weak as one can possibly get. But it is indeed evidence. It's real evidence. And it's evidence that keeps piling up more and more and more and more. And there's something else. There's, well, I won't go into the physical aspects of it right now, too, because those are extremely important. But here you have a situation where people are coming to me who are psychiatrists, who are abductees, and psychologists, and therapists, and university professors, and businessmen, and physicians, and people who could never hold a job all throughout their lives, and people who dropped out of school in the ninth grade and all that sort of thing, and everybody in between. And they're all saying the same thing, and what they're doing is they're testifying against their own interests. They know that by saying that they've been abducted by little beings from outer space or whatever, that this can only be something bad to say. This is not a good thing to say. This, if it were to get out, would destroy whatever careers they have. It would make them an object of ridicule for their friends and family. It's all downside, no upside. And they, particularly people who are really high functioning, who have very high level positions, they're coming to me and they're telling me they're being abducted by aliens. I mean, it's an extraordinary thing to say, considering what's at stake. So that, plus the fact that everybody is essentially saying the same things that I had never heard before, but they know them, and they're not aware of other people's testimony. Plus, as we go along, I can tell you a whole bunch of other things which make it strong for me. I became convinced fairly early on that this was a matter of enormous importance.
You know, Dr. Jacobs, we've been taking people's calls from around the world, and people are calling in, telling their stories in regards to alien abductions. And there's this one unique young man. He's from Maine. He came forward with his real name, David, and he explains to us that he was being abducted when he was 3 years old, and it continued until he was four, and he probably about 90 abductions within 1 year. And he said over the year that it was okay in the beginning until they wanted to, you know, experiment, start poking them with things. Is this the same kind of story that you hear? Are the abductions in the beginning kind of friendly, and then they kind of go into this experimental stage? And why are they doing experiments? And is the agenda in a positive or negative way?
Whoa, that's a lot of questions. And I'm going to forget. I'm going to leave it for you to remember the exact questions he said. I'm going to try to take one at a time. I don't know if we're going to forget them because I've already forgotten what it is that I'm doing here. But other than that, starting at 3 and 4, well, now first thing first, when people remember things consciously, it is ingrained in their memory. It happened to them. They're absolutely positive of it. It is absolute, with absolute certainty, and it is almost always wrong. I've had a lot of experience with people who remember things outright. They're remembering an abduction event, but exactly what happened in that event is twisted. Sometimes it's imaginary material is mixed into it. Sometimes it's images that the aliens placed for specific procedures within their minds. So, they skip all over the place. Sometimes it's a combination of other events that have happened to them. So when people present to me an account saying, this is exactly what happened to me, I remember just like it was yesterday, blah, 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 my answer always is, that's very interesting. Let's see exactly what happens. And then when they begin to recount it under hypnosis, I hate to use the word hypnosis. I prefer to use the word facilitator recall because it gets away from the stigma of hypnosis. But when they recount it in an altered state, that is to say focused and relaxed, they begin to realize, oh, I got it wrong. I was abducted all right. And some of the things that I remember did happen to me, but this also happened, and that happened, and something else that I thought happened didn't happen, and on and on and on and on and on. So you got to be very, very, very careful with consciously recalled events. And I know that there are books written of nothing but consciously recalled events, and some of those books are hoaxes, and some of those books are just extremely untrustworthy. You have to be very careful. Now, the next point is between the ages of 3 and 4. What we've learned is that the abduction phenomenon starts probably in infancy because parents are abducted with their babies. But we know that they're abducted very early on. So 3 and 4 is okay. Now 3 and 4, it's tough. The brain is not fully organized yet to remember everything because most people will remember just flash memories, if that, of 3 and 4. Of the 2 years, I might remember one thing or a couple of things that happened during that period. We have to be very, very careful of memories from that time, no matter what. However, they are being abducted. Now, he said 90 times, which means that he remembered 90 events at age 3 or 4. On his side is the brain is not organized to remember anything, but oddly, it's easier for people to remember for kids to remember consciously what has happened to them than adults. They remember things consciously, oftentimes wrong, but they remember things consciously early on until about the age of 11 or 10 or whatever. And then they begin to forget just like normal humans, like adult humans do. And when that happens, they tend to think, oh, well, maybe I was just dreaming all that stuff up. So
in this certain case, David was having problems, trying to tell his story, like you say, nobody's want to come out public with something like this because they're afraid of ridicule, and that's exactly what he received, and a lot of it. But then one day when he was 14, he was abducted again, and he was actually in the ship waving to his mother and father from within the ship while it was hovering over their house, and that really helped him out later on in life, that he was got confirmation from his parents that what he was seeing and experiencing was real. And again, I just want to ask you, everybody talks about probing with alien abduction. Can you go into a little bit more detail on the similarities that you've come across through your 900 or 1,000 hypnotic regression sessions?
Sure. I guess what I'm saying is that people are abducted from the time they're infants until old age. They're abducted with great frequency. Women, I think, more so than men, because there's more procedures that happen to women that require more abductions. What we have here is, in the beginning, when we first began to study this subject, we had a model that was based on the Barney and Betty Hill account, which was in 1961. This was an interracial couple who were traveling to New Hampshire on their way to Portsmouth, New Hampshire, and were abducted. They were an outstanding civic-minded couple. They were active in civic affairs. They were politically active. They had everything to lose and nothing to gain by talking about this subject. And what we found from their account was that they were placed on a table and that they were examined. Thus grew the examination/experimentation/study concept about what these beings were up to. And UFO researchers, abduction researchers, grabbed onto that and held it tight to themselves, and it became, the aliens were experimenting on us. And that is what I believed, writing, even when I wrote my first book on abductions called Secret Life, my concept throughout this, my framework was, this was experimenting, learning, a study situation. By the time I wrote my second book about abductions called The Threat, I realized that the evidence simply was not there for this to be an experiment, or a study, or a learning situation for them. It just wouldn't hold. The evidence just wouldn't hold. It was, as I found, a program that was goal-directed. It had a beginning, a middle, and an end. It was done for a reason. It was not an experiment. You got to remember, this is a global phenomenon. The United States is not have exclusively abductees in it. This is a global phenomenon. The amount of time and energy and the alien power, so to speak, put into this program is jaw-dropping. It's enormous. It's beyond imagination. There's never been anything like it this on Earth before. And they're doing it clandestinely. That is to say, they're doing it so that they can't be discovered, so we won't know. And the reason that they're doing it clandestinely, secretly, is because they don't want us to know what they're doing. That is basically irrefutable. For whatever reason, they don't want us to know that. But whatever reason they're doing it for, it is not because they're experimenting. That is, that just is not in the evidence, now that we know it.
Wow, you know, a whole new way of looking at things. Go ahead, Doc.
Dr. David Jacobs, I wanted to talk to you. The book, the second one you wrote, Threat, that is a very powerful word, because not only is it the title of your book, it's actually what is actually happening, the threat to the human race. Now, there are two camps, as you know, with regards to UFO believers and abductees. Some of them who are abductees call themselves contactees because they say they go willingly. But how can you go willingly and be subjected to medical experiments and have your semen and ova extracted and then consider that a positive experience? So to me, it just doesn't jive that it would be a good thing. Now, that's what I wanted to get to your next question. You researched this for decades, and you've come to several conclusions, one of them being about the alien threat. Can you tell us, and all the listeners out there, what do you think their true agenda is?
Right. Well, before I even say that, first of all, I don't believe in the concept of contactees. First, if for anybody who knows anything about UFO history, contactees were the name of people who grew up in the 1950s who were all charlatans and who claimed to take trips to the moon and Neptune and Uranus and all the rest of that stuff. And George Shadamsky was one of them, and Howard Minger, who got off on the moon surface and had dinner with the king of the moon, and you know, they wrote books and all that, and they were called contactees, and they really prevented UFO researchers from looking at the abduction phenomenon, thinking it was just sort of modern day contacteeism. Now I know the word has changed, but contactees often say they've just been contacted by aliens and given messages or something like that, or they've gone willingly. None of that makes any sense whatsoever to me. None. Zero as an abduction researcher. Because they can't say no. They just plain can't say no. If they're abductees, they're abductees, and saying no is not a concept. You got to remember, this has started in infancy and goes all the way through with great frequency. And I have not seen any differences in that in the years I've been doing this. So people who think they're contactees think that they have power or control. They don't, and they think they've only been abducted once or twice or whatever it is, and they haven't been. And as you say, having sperm and eggs taken from them is, I guess some people might be willing to have that done to them, but But they can't say no. You know, whether they're willing or not, they are not in control. The beings who do it are in control, and that is a bottom line. And what was the other thing? I mean, yes, what is the... You're jumping to the ultimate question, John. The ultimate question is, why is this happening?
Yes.
Well, you should probably ask me that at the end of the show. Because now I'm going to confirm everybody's mind.
Let's get to this question, and we'll save that one for the grand finale. I'm going to have to be stepping out. I'm working on a couple projects. We're trying to recover that possible dead alien baby underneath the house, and you know, we're trying to get some close-up footage of it and maybe getting the material evidence in our hands. David Jacobs, have you ever come across in your hypnotic regressions sessions about alien abductees not recalling their abductions until later in life?
Oh, yeah, that happens all the time. Yeah, something will come floating to the surface. You know, if I do a couple of sessions with people, they tend to begin to remember other sessions, other events that have happened to them in the past, obviously. Once we start working together, I prefer to work with things that happened within the past month or week or last night. In other words, it continues to happen. We're having sessions, and they'll go home and be abducted, and they'll tell me something happened to me last night, and they, you know, another week later they'll come in and we'll do a session on what happened. But during, even they might have been abducted even after that time and all that. So. So, you know, people say, well, it's all, it has to do with memory. It's all the problems with memory. And that's true. But I've done regressions with people who are abducted in the morning. And here it is in the afternoon, and they're at my house. And it doesn't take a whole lot for them to remember something in the morning. In other words, it's memory, all right, but it's blocked memory. That's the problem. It's memory where the only way I can describe it is erroneously, and that's by using a computer kind of image, and that is the RAM cannot access the hard drive. The random access memory, the short-term memory, cannot access the long-term memory, is what it boils down to. But the identify down long-term memory. So memory is tricky, and you got to be careful even with short-term stuff. So I do tend to look at people who've had recent experiences. And what was the first part of your question there, John?
Well, the point that I'm trying to get at is, just for the viewers and listeners out there, what would they have to do to, you know, recall possible abduction cases in their lifetime, if they haven't? You know, people are walking around now, they've been abducted, and they don't, or they're not aware that they have been in the past. Is there anything that maybe they can, you know, try and do, think about, or, you know, go back?
Well, yes and no. This is a secret program, a clandestine program that works exceptionally well. It is extremely good in terms of the consequences of their actions. That is to say, I would say that 95% and up of abductees do not know what has happened to them, don't remember their abductions. But they do have bizarre lives. They have odd things that happen in their lives. They see religious figures. They travel on the astral plane. One guy was traveling on the astral plane. He noticed that there was a lot of leaves and stuff in his gutters on top of his roof. traveling on the astral plane, sort of like a different form of astral plane. This was part of an abduction event, you know, as one of the things he noticed in his first sense was he was traveling on the astral plane. Or they see ghosts or deceased relatives standing by their beds. Or they have odd missing time situations where they're watching television, and then a second later, it's 2 hours later, and they're basically still sitting on the couch watching television, and they wonder, well, wait a second, I was waiting for my favorite show to come on, and now the show has been over for an hour, and that's why I was sitting here. You know, and they have things like that, or they're missing, and other people notice that they're missing, and they search frantically for them, and police are called, and all the rest of that stuff that has happened, and or they have odd displacements in time, where they're in one space, and then suddenly they're in another place, and how they got there. Or you have situations as follows. Here's a couple driving down the street, and this is an extremely high-functioning scientist, in fact, with his wife, and they're driving down the street, and actually was a turnpike or something. And it's about 10:30 at night. They see a light out through the windshield. Suddenly there's a flash. They look at each other and they say, "What was that?" You know, both of them saw, both of them were astounded to see this thing. I can't imagine what it would be. Then they notice it's 2 hours later. They're still driving and they're in the same spot as they were before. Now, only abductees will say that. This is two people. You have to remember, this is two people saying this. Two independent minds, both of them having the same exact experience at exactly the same time and the same strangeness. So they lead odd lives, but they cannot connect it to the abduction phenomenon. The question is this, for people who are really abduction aficionados, are there, and I don't know the answer to this, but are there an increased number of abductees who were nuns and priests and ministers than in the non-clerical population? And the reason is because they saw something at night, let's just say, which they interpreted as a religious apparition who has come to get them, to deal with them, to talk to them in some way. Therefore, they have devoted their life to a religious pursuit. And I don't know the answer to that question, but it would be interesting to see if there is any correlation. I don't know, maybe not, but it would be interesting to find out. Because what they've done is they've slotted an abduction event, perhaps, into something that makes sense to them, a religious apparition. And people, you know, do this all the time in a variety of other ways, too. They just relegate what they saw to a kind of menu of explanations that the society provides to them that's within a kind of semi-normal paradigm and allows them to just lead a normal life. Non-abductees usually don't have things like that. They might have one incident that happened once in their life, and who knows what actually happened and this and that. But abductees tend to lead more bizarre lives, which they think is normal.
Well, that's, there's all types of people that we get information from around the world in regard to alien abductions. And you're right, they come in all, professional forms, all the way down from the bottom, you know, janitors to doctors and lawyers, police officers, doctors, you know, it's pretty amazing, and something really is going on. John, are you there?
Yes, of course.
All right, John. Hey, you know, I just want everybody to know out there that we are working on this breaking news situation in regards to that skull and body of some kind of alien looking form found underneath the house, and we're trying to, you know, get the material in our hands, get it tested, and find out what it really is. And I'm looking forward to it. And you know, if anybody's captured anything amazing, you could send it to Third Phase of Moon via Skype or Facebook, and we sure would like to look at your stuff. And, you know, John, Dr. Donnie Lyce, I know you got some great questions coming up in the second half of this interview with Dr. David Jacobs in regards to hypnotic regression. I really want to thank you, Dr. David Jacobs, for, taking my questions.
Oh, no problem.
And Blake, thank you for joining us. I know the viewers wanted to hear from the man himself that we've been talking about for the weeks leading on, and it was a pleasure to have you back on.
All right, I appreciate it. We'll see you guys next time.
All right, for sure. Mr. Jacobs, or Dr. Jacobs, we are going to be going to commercials shortly, but sure.
I was going to say,
just prior to that,
on
when you were mentioning the contacting movement in the 50s, basically, yes, you were right. That was a whole mockery of the whole UFO movement. When I was referring to the recent contact...
Folks, we are back here live on Revolution Radio, Third Phase of Moon Radio. I just want to clarify some things prior to this. The first hour, we had some technical difficulties, but it was not us. Is it possible hackers, or maybe is it someone suppressing what we're saying because of such an important topic? We don't know. But the point is as you all can see what happened. Before we went to break, we were talking to Dr. Jacobs, and we're going to continue speaking to this fine gentleman, for the rest of this hour. But first, let me make some announcements. Don't forget, next week we're going to have Stephen Bassett on the 18th, April 18th, who's going to be discussing the citizens' hearing with its National Press Club, a quasi-congressional hearing. The 25th, Richard Dolan, and May 2nd, Jordan Maxwell. But without any further ado, I'd like to bring back Dr. Jacobs because we have a whole lot of subjects we need to cover. Dr. Jacobs, are you back?
I am here.
Excellent, excellent. You know, there are so many questions that I can ask you, and we can go on for this, because you are truly a walking encyclopedia on this. You, Bud Hopkins, and John Mack are basically formed abduction research in the sense that you guys were giving it clinical study. You were doing this from an academic standpoint of view, everything professional, and that's why it makes you three stand out. Now, with the passing of John Mack and Bud Hopkins, you are the only one left who has the decades of knowledge, and that's why, to us, you are the esteemed authority. Now, I'd like to
It's all by default. It's not my doing. It's just because it's a sad commentary on the fact that the scientific and academic community has not looked into this. And if you want to ask me later about why should the scientific and academic community look into it, I'll give you an argument that has not ever been given before. That only takes 20 seconds. And it's a mind-blowing, if I may use a phrase from the 1960s, argument for why they should study it.
You know, while we're talking about it right now, why don't you give us that?
Well, it takes a little bit of background, which is why I'll be showing later, but it doesn't really matter. The abduction phenomenon has a physicality to it that cannot be denied. In other words, people are physically missing from their normal environments when they are abducted. And once again, as I said before, this has happened time and time again. And parents have searched for their children have searched for their parents. People have searched for others that they don't know. For example, here's an example of not being there. A woman who was an abductee had the phenomenon is intergenerational also, so it starts, the person is an abductee whose mother or father was an abductee, or both of them. And Bud Hopkins discovered this decades ago, and it's remained true ever since. So a woman called her sister over to take care of her young child, who was about 6 years old, while she went out. She had to go out that evening. The sister came over. Everything was fine. They watched television with the little girl. And then for some reason or other, the sister decided to take a bath. The little kid was downstairs watching television. So she went, she took a bath, and she got a novel out, and she started looking at the novel, and the only thing that she remembered was it was like an hour later, and she was still sitting there staring at the same page of the novel, and she thought to herself, what just happened? And then she realized, oh my God, it's an hour later. My sister, my niece, so she flies out of the bathroom, she puts her robot or whatever it is, she runs downstairs, and the little girl is gone. The little girl was watching television on the couch. She's not on the couch. She's nowhere. So she goes up to the bedrooms and here and there, and she's calling her name and calling her name, and she's frantic now. Now she's beginning to panic. She thinks maybe the little girl has gone off and out the door, and she goes, she then makes, she comes down and she makes another thorough search of the house. She looks in the closets here and there. Then she goes outside onto the sidewalk to call for her. And there's a guy who lives next door who's standing there and says, do you need help or something? She says, I can't find my niece. She was here a while ago and now she's gone. So she says, well, I'll go in and check. So he runs in and comes out a few seconds later and he says, well, I found her. And the woman says, where was she? She says, well, she was asleep on the couch.
So she was gone, and then all of a sudden she reappeared on the couch after.
That's exactly what happened. In other words, they're missing. They're physically missing when they are abducted. You have to understand that. This is not some sort of a mind thing.
Yes, yes.
Second of all, people return with unusual marks and scars on their body, and sometimes they return with fully formed scar tissue on their body that wasn't there the day before. Fully formed scar tissue. This is biologically impossible, and I have seen it. Third, people are abducted in groups and can confirm each other's abductions. They can say they know, and oftentimes these are family groups, but sometimes they're not, and they have chance meetings with people who know who they are, and they know who they are, and so forth. And this happens not that often, but it does happen. It happens often with family groups.
You know, Dr. Now, Jacobs, I got to concur with everything you've said, because Jim Sparks was one of those when he was taken, not astrally taken as some proclaim, but physically taken. And when he realized he was being abducted, there was a glass window / door, and he saw that his feet had mud and he had tracks of mud. Half the foot of the mud was inside the house, the other half was outside. I mean, meaning that at some point his foot stepped there. So that's just one thing I want to confirm, with that it's going on exactly as you say, and the people are missing.
Right. Now, supposing, you know, I'm going to leave Sparks out of this because I've read his book, and I must say that I found very I had a lot of difficulty with that book. But aside from that, the point is that these things are happening, abducted in groups, scar tissue, and all the rest of the things that I said. And there's more, physically missing from the normal environment, and there's even more. But just with those few things, they're physically missing, they have scars. Sometimes they come back wearing their clothes inside out, backwards, or wearing somebody else's clothes. And they're abducted in groups, and it's not happening. It's not happening. This is all mental. They're abducted in groups that can confirm each other's abductions, and they're physically missing, and it's not happening.
According to the mainstream people.
Well, let's just say that is the case, that it's not happening. Now, you'd think that the academic community, the scientific community, would be interesting in the most bizarre phenomenon ever in the history of humankind, because people are physically missing, they're abducted in groups, they come back with biologically impossible scars on their bodies, and they're not being abducted. You see what I mean? You can't even get your mind around that. It's almost impossible to conceive of what I'm saying if it's not happening.
Yes.
That's why academics and scientists should be leaping over each other, gouging each other's eyes out to be first in line to study this phenomenon. Because it's not happening, and yet these things are happening. People are physically missing from their normal environments. There are other people who can confirm them, sometimes family members, sometimes not. They do have unusual, you see what I mean? It's hard to grasp what I'm saying if it's not happening. And yet, the academic and the scientific community has no interest in this subject whatsoever. None, zero, couldn't care less.
You know,
in fact, right,
Dr. Jacobs, I have to completely agree with you that these skeptics and academics should be listening in and following along with this, because it is happening. People are physically missing, and people meet people on top aboard, on top in ships, on these mass abductions, and then on the streets they later find themselves knowing that they have some sort of, you know, recognizing themselves, and then they realize where it happened. So the combination of the three factors that you said, you're right, the academics should be jumping on this, but obviously because many people are narrow-minded and they say, well, if this doesn't exist, therefore this can't exist. That's the problem we have.
It's burying their heads in the sand. There's no, it's just it's there's a thousand different reasons why they have not looked into it. But I'd be willing to grant the idea. Okay, I will throw away my life and say, well, it's not happening. I've examined this for 25 years and it's not happening. Now, what is happening? How do people who are psychiatrists come to me and say the most ruinous things for their careers imaginable, and yet it's not happening? What would cause people to do that and to be abducted in groups? As soon as you say the word group, you leave psychology out of it to a large extent, but to be abducted in groups and confirm each other's abductions, and it's not happening. And yet people say, well, I saw you and I were on board, you know, like that, or describe, people describe, I remember once I was doing a guy who was 22 years old. I don't like to work with people that young, but he was the son of an abductee I worked with for years, and he knew he was an abductee. And we did like a second session, and he's walking through this room, and he doesn't have his clothes on or anything like that, and then there's a bunch of tables, and suddenly he says, "Ah!" And he notices his mother is standing over there without any clothes on.
Ah.
And it just shocked him. And he said, I guess that's just the way this thing is, you know, and that was it. But he had this visceral reaction suddenly to seeing his mother standing there, not so much as not being abducted, but she was naked. And so the fact is, though, that okay, so these are things that give you a sense of verisimilitude, of truthfulness. So there's no reason to say this. You know, it's like when I first started doing abduction research, a woman says to me, I'm in my bedroom now. I have to admit that the majority of courses of events that I have looked at have not been when a person is asleep. That is a not, have not been when a person is asleep, because one of the current ideas is, well, it's all sleep paralysis. This was a current idea 15 years ago also, but the people who are coming forth with this have no knowledge of the past, so they don't realize that this has already been argued about and dismissed. But they think it's sleep paralysis, which, of course, answers nothing. And things happen, you know, at night, too, and all that. Anyway, let's see, where was he? What was I just saying a second ago? What was it? What was the example I was giving?
That the people are, you know, they're not asleep. It's not sleep paralysis.
Yeah, before that.
We were talking about them knowing that they're on mass abductions and...
Well, whatever it was, I'll remember it in a second.
Well,
so the point is that these things are very, very, very difficult to just dismiss.
Yes.
If it was just, if all the accounts were different, if everybody was saying something, oh, I know what it was. If all the accounts were different, you wouldn't have a situation like as follows. Mm-hmm. Person comes and she's talking to me like she's in bed. She's these beings are coming into the room, and now she's sort of floating out of bed and or getting out of bed, and they're maneuvering her towards the window. And then out she goes through the window.
Yes.
And I say, oh, wait a minute. Now, let me back you up a little bit. This is early on in my abduction career, so to speak. I said, when you get to the window, do you open the window? Do you open the window? I mean, obviously, you're going to open the window. You know. She says, no, I don't open the window. I said, well, do these characters you're with here, do they open the window? She says, no, they don't. And then she says, I say, does the window open by itself in some strange way? No. She says, I think I'm floating right through the closed window. Then she says to me, does anybody else ever report that? Of course, not knowing that. Eventually, everybody reports that. Everybody reports that. Everybody. And I can say everybody because everybody's been abducted many, many times, and the window is the number one choice to go through. Second choice is the wall. Third choice is the ceiling. And fourth choice is through the front door. But the point is that if this was not happening, they would say, why, of course I opened the window. And then the believability of their story, psychologically generated, would be fine. They opened the window, and then they went out it. Okay, I don't know how they floated out it, but at least they opened a window. But saying that they didn't open the window just puts a barrier to belief in the story that they're saying. And there's for no reason whatsoever. Zero reason.
You know, I agree with that completely, 100%, because, you know, in that instance that those people are doing that, they're actually leaving, like you said, a barrier for them to be prevented from being taken seriously. Hey, Dr. Jacobs, I just want to let you know that the MUFON investigator of over 23 years, Preston Bennett, is also on the line. He just joined us, so it'll be a three-way. I'm sure you two have run across each other before. You're on the East Coast, he's on the West Coast. Well, you both have been involved in some work. Hi, Preston.
Hello. Hi, John. Hi, Dr. Jacobs. It's an honor to speak with you.
Okay.
Oh, hi. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, yeah.
Now, Dr. Jacobs, I wanted to ask one small question, and then I wanted to go on to this theory I have. Let's just do the small question real quick. It could even be a small yes or no answer. Have you ever heard of an abduction case where someone was taken out of a prison or a jail?
You know, I've had a lot of letters from people who say that they've been abducted from a prison or jail. I generally don't answer letters from prisoners because of a lot of personal reasons.
For good reason, of course.
Well, yeah, and it even goes beyond that. But I generally don't, and they say that. So I haven't been able to. I talked with one person who was actually an abductee who wound up in jail.
Oh.
Who I had worked with. And he said he was abducted from jail also. Now, how this can be, I do not know. I'd have to go and investigate it. My sense is they're abducted from jail. A guard comes around to check if everything's in bed, notices that somebody is not in bed, and says, everything seems okay here, and goes on. That's my sense of how it works, but I'm guessing. The environment must be controlled, which is why if a husband is abducted, the wife just continues to sleep, and even if he tries to arouse her, he can't because the environment is controlled. There's a whole lot of other reasons for it too.
Well, I'm certain that UFOs. Could abduct someone from a prison. I wrote an article, in fact, about that sort of thing where UFOs are seen over jails and prisons, and there's a good dozen cases like that. And as you know, Doctor, these abductions can happen pretty much anywhere. Isn't that correct?
That is correct. That is correct. Pretty much anywhere. Now, they can, but they're not. In other words, if you're sitting in the stands of the Super Bowl, you're not going to be abducted. Usually people are abducted when they're going to be missed the least, which is usually at night. And people are abducted from their workplace, but most of the time they're not.
Yes.
What about from planes? Or do you have any cases of people being abducted from planes or trains and things like that?
Planes, trains, and automobiles. Yeah, there are some cases like that. Bud Hopkins has had some cases of people being abducted from planes and from ships as well.
Ah.
And that, I have not investigated those personally, so I have to leave the door open a little bit. But basically, it's when people are going to be missed the least. That's the one thing that I found that seems to be a constant.
Ah. Now, let me get to this theory that I have, and I wanted to ask your opinion, and maybe you can tell this. You were able to trace back some of the abductions going down family lines all the way to the late 19th century, the 1880s, 1890s, and they seemed to be abducting their offspring and then those offspring and so on and so forth. Now, in a book I read, I think it was by Bud Hopkins, and in several other instances, people were talking about when they were abducted, after a female that was abducted, years later she would be brought back on the board and she would be shown several hybrids. And over the years, it seems that the hybrids had less alien features and more human features. Do you think, and that this is what the threat is coming for, do you think that they're walking amongst us? What do you think their agenda in that sense is? Do you think they want to infiltrate us by looking just like us?
Well, let's put it this way. Yes. Now I'll fill in on that a little bit. This is something that I never wanted to face, and asking if aliens are walking among us, that used to be, as I've said many times before, that was my favorite question, because the answer allowed me to seem like I was sane. Like there was a line over which I would not cross. That enough was enough. People are being abducted, but who's to say whether hybrids are walking among us? It doesn't seem there's no evidence for it whatsoever. I could proudly proclaim. Now, having done nothing but basically hybrid research as much as I can since 2003, essentially. Although I'm doing hybrid research beforehand, but now I've really been concentrating on it. Since that time, I now realize that there has been a refinement of the hybrid species. In the threads, I had early stage, middle stage, and late stage hybrids, and now I have human stage hybrids. And people have been telling me, people who are unaware that other people are saying the same thing, that they've been helping hybrids to integrate into this society. Now, that this might be an integration program with people who look like us but who are not us is the end. It's not the end point, but it is certainly the targeted point for every single thing that the abduction phenomenon has pointed to. In other words, everything in the abduction phenomenon, from every aspect we learned from the very first cases, Antonio Villas-Boas and Barney and Betty Hill in the 50s and the early 60s and all that, have indicated that something like that was happening once you put the pieces together, once you began to realize that all the evidence was the same and it was all leading in one direction. It doesn't lead anywhere else except that. And now, when people ask me that question, I have to say, well, there's a real good possibility that indeed this is happening in that way, that these hybrids are integrating into the society and living here and all that, even though I know it makes me sound completely nuts. However, the evidence inextricably leads there and has always pointed towards that direction. Now, the more we know about this phenomenon, the more we realize that. And so but the question is why?
Yes.
That is the ultimate question in abduction research. That is the jackpot question. That is the question that answers everything, and we do not know the answer to that question. We don't know. Obviously, we don't know a hell of a lot more than we do know, but that is the jackpot question. And we don't even have a glimmer of knowledge in it. I can guess in a very, very general term. Maybe it's a geopolitical thing. Maybe it's for resources. Maybe they got a dying planet, whatever. There's no evidence for any of those. That's credible evidence. And so we just plain don't know. Now, here's the thing. Aliens, that is to say, our friendly insect-like aliens, who appear to be at the top of the pecking order of the abduction phenomenon, are notoriously unforthcoming.
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got taller gray aliens and smaller gray aliens. They are not very forthcoming either, but some of them will talk a little bit. Hybrids talk quite a lot, depending on the degree of hybridization. But when you get to the point of the smaller gray aliens and hybrids, oftentimes they don't know what this program is for. All they know is that they need to do their duty. They have a course of action that they have to fulfill. They have a function, in other words, and that's what they do. Asking why is not up to them. They don't know about that stuff. So we simply do not have the evidence to answer the question why. If I could find out the why question, I would go to the great beyond with a smile on my face, I think. But I'm not sure. We don't know.
You know, I really hope that, like I said, there's two camps out there. There's the people that believe they're here to save us, and then the other people who believe they're here for their own agenda. And truthfully, you know, we know Third Phase of the Moon Radio. I'm your host, Dr. J. Andy Elias, and we've been speaking with Dr. David Jacobs. But before we go back to what we were speaking before, I just want to make a couple announcements again. Don't forget that next week, April 18th, we have Stephen Bassett discussing the citizens hearing. Then the week after that, on the 25th, April 25th, we're going to have Richard Dolan. The following week, Thursday, May 2nd, same time, 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific East, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we're going to have Jordan Maxwell. And real quick, I just want to let everyone know that we have a fundraiser, because this is a listener-supported station. This is our forum to give the public unfettered access to real information, and we'd like you all to contribute to our station to keep it going. We would greatly appreciate any donation that you could make, as small it is as to as large as it can be. But please do so. Go on to freedomslips.com and you could find the donate section. And right before we bring back Dr. David Jacobs, I just want to let you all know where to find his information. He has a website. It's www.ufoabduction.com. Once again, ufoabduction.com. All his books are available on Amazon. And without any further ado, let's bring back Dr. Jacobs.
I'm here.
Excellent. Right before we went to break, we were talking about this integration process with these hybrids that are looking more and more like human, that are possibly walking amongst us. Let's continue on that path. What do you think is really happening? Because from what I could be wrong, because what I noticed is there's a lot of people who have been abducted, yet they don't know it, or their subconscious mind has blocked it out so severely they don't want to seek out any hypnotic regression because they're so fearful of what they might find. So that being said, I'm pretty sure the Roper poll, which said that 1 in 40 people in the United States have been abducted, may be accurate.
Well, the Roper poll said that about 1 in 50 people have had experiences that abductees have had, but don't know that they're abductees, basically. Well, we don't know whether they don't know it or not, but 1 in 50 people have been abducted. 1 in 50 have had experiences that abductees have had. That's
yes.
The best we can say about the Roper poll. Bud Hopkins and I, with the help of Ron Westrom and Eastern Michigan University, put that together back in 1991. That number is actually crazily, spectacularly conservative. The number actually should be closer to 5%, and maybe even more. And that's just the United States. This is a global phenomenon. Once again, America does not have a corner on the abduction market. And so, in other words, even if you don't believe that poll, which we think is a very good poll, if you don't believe it, all I can tell you is that to my colleagues, John Mack and Bud Hopkins and to me and others, we've received thousands and thousands and thousands of letters and emails from abductees, meaning that they have to find out, for example, where my website is and then go to it and then take the time to fill out a questionnaire or else write me a letter or whatever it is. And, you know, as you know, if a couple of people write to a network, they've got ways in which they can figure out how many does that couple of people actually represent out there. So what we have thousands and thousands and thousands of letters, and I have all of Bud Hopkins' files. I can attest to it, to the amount of letters that he's gotten. And that means that there's one hell of a lot of people who might have had abduction experiences in the United States alone.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, I think that it's a lot more common than even a lot of UFO researchers realize. But my question to you is, what is your stance on, you know, this hostility versus benevolence question? Because I know there are some abductees who are offended by that term and prefer to call themselves contactees and say they have positive experiences.
Right.
No, there's a whole range, but what do you think is your general...
Well, contactees who have had positive experiences, they all have things in common. Number one, they've had no hypnosis, no facilitated recall whatsoever, and they're just remembering things straight out. A very dangerous thing to do in terms of the researcher, because when they remember things straight out without consciously, it's usually garbled. Second thing is they've had hypnosis with a researcher who has a New Age agenda and can simply apply that New Age agenda to whatever they say, and they'll go along with it. And I've seen that happen for years and years and years and years and years. For people who don't have an agenda, as I didn't when I first started, not knowing what in the hell I was going to find, and not being a New Age person or a religious person necessarily or anything like that. As a historian, what I wanted to find out was exactly what is happening. We'll deal with the ramifications of it later. And let's get a chronology here first. Let's just see what happens. How do they get out of their room? How do they get out of their car? How do they get into the object? How do they walk down a hallway? You know, how do they get their clothes off? Let's just do it chronologically. That's sort of what I started with. I have never found a truly malevolent abduction event, and I've never found a truly benevolent abduction event. That's all I can say.
Are you familiar with the case of John Hunter Gray, John Salter, who had an abduction in Wisconsin? And he's going on the whole circuit saying that he was healed by these guys, and he thinks that they're, you know, benevolent, straight up.
Right. As I remember, in the Salter case is an old case. They grew hair on him or something like that. His hair grew back, and he had all these other miraculous things. The problem is this. People who have serious diseases are not cured. Carla Turner was an abductee and an abduction researcher. She died of breast cancer. Other people who I know have died who are abductees, and they don't necessarily fix them. I used to think that there was a certain amount of healings, and I know that you've done a lot of work on this, but I've revised that. I think that they heal children sometimes. And in the thread when I wrote about the healings, it was primarily a few children. And I think, and people have told me that they had a cold or they had the flu, and then when they came back from the event, they didn't have the cold or the flu. And I don't think that they healed it. I think that had to do with extraneous events. I think that had to do perhaps with the air that they were breathing, which was a modified oxygen so that disease is not spread among hybrids. But I may be wrong about that. I'm guessing. But too many people who are abductees have died and with no help, and killed in car accidents, and they killed with cancer, whatever it is. So I backed off that a little bit. I wish it were true. One person, however, said that, and this was in Secret Life, that when they were doing something that in some way helped her, she said that it was more equipment maintenance than anything else.
Right. I remember reading that.
I talked with her recently, incidentally. She still, of course, is having the abduction events. She's in her 60s now, and she was very young at the time. But, these things go on all throughout the course of a person's life. And she has all sorts of horrendous ailments, but she's still been motoring along. And her friends from up in the sky have not helped her one bit.
Have you noticed any pattern what type of person has these experiences, or can it be just anybody?
Yes. The pattern is that their mother or their father was an abductee every single time. I haven't found any exceptions to that. Now, having said that, I'm overstepping my evidence because I'm just going by what the abductee tells me, that the mother has seen UFOs and the mother's had odd experiences, but the father has never had anything. And then it probably came down through the mother. But we know that their children are abductees. So we know it's intergenerational. Once again, this was found by Bud Hopkins decades ago. Now, there's a current sort of theory going around that people have Rh-negative blood. The answer to that is as follows. People don't know they're abductees. All people know what kind of blood type they got. Doesn't really matter. They get married to whoever they fall in love with, abductee or not. Now, they don't get married to people who have a special kind of blood type. That's not a major determinant to whether they're going to marry somebody, you know what I mean? And so they just get married to anybody who they want. And since there are millions of people involved with this, the chances of it being primarily Rh negative is negative. I've been asking abductees what their blood type is. I haven't asked that many abductees. But so far, I haven't found anybody with Rh negative yet. I'm sure I will eventually. But people out in internet land, people come up with sort of interesting ideas, but they remain interesting but not proven, and nobody's been able to come up and show that abductees actually have this. And I've been able to, I can probably show just the simple logic that it is impossible for that to happen. Because when you get married and you have Rh negative blood and you have four kids, you know, the chances are 50-50 whether two of them will have it and two might have it and two will be 50-50. You know, then the statistics run out eventually.
Dr. Jacobs, you know, you've, through all the years that you've done your research, you've said that the people, when they're taken on board, a lot of them are shown scenes of destruction and other catastrophic events, and then they're given jobs to do, or they're trained for jobs to do for when the extraterrestrials finally come. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Right. Well, those two are not linked. Now, in other words, they're not shown these images, and then they're given jobs as if there's a linkage. They're completely unlinked. People would call me unhinged, and so I can't use that phrase, but they're unlinked. We don't know what those images of death, destruction, the meteor hitting, the earth cracking in half, armies fighting, dead bodies, we don't know what that's for. I tend to think that it's more of a neurological situation. Neurological conditioning or neurological tuning or whatever it's doing, then a predictive thing of this is going to happen in the future. The point here is we don't really know. We don't really know why these are happening, but I do know that when people have told me that things are going to happen in the year 1999, when 99 came and went, nothing happened. So the question then is, did these beings actually say this to the person, as I so confidently wrote, for example, in Secret Life, as if it actually was true? Or, although I said that this kind of a prediction, is iffy, but were they even told that or not? And the reason I say or not is because there are huge, huge red flag areas in terms of memory of abduction events, where people can fabulate like crazy, especially in the first couple of sessions that they have when they don't realize it. And confabulation, the number one area of confabulation is description of aliens, which is why I had a woman just the other day tell me that there were hundreds of different types of aliens, and I read on the internet just today that there somebody written that there are 280 different types of aliens. The answer is that's confabulation. That's when people say the aliens look thusly, and they don't look thusly. They look differently than what they originally saw, but they remember it sometimes consciously, and that's when you get into problems. And even in hypnosis, they'll remember it erroneously. And as it goes along and as you work with them, everything resolves into our friendly little gray aliens and insect-like ones and you know, hybrids and things like that. But the number two area, and it's really a co-area, there's co-number ones, really, is recounting alien dialogue. And here's a problem that it's difficult to impress this on people enough. When people tell me, well, the alien said to me that blah, 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 the problem is this. All communication is telepathic on board a UFO. Now, when I ask people to tell you what they mean by telepathic, sometimes they say it's just an impression I get in my mind, which translates it to English, and I know, you know, I have to get up on the table. Or they say that they're hearing actual sentences and verbs and nouns and all that sort of thing. But if it's telepathic and they're hearing it in their mind, what's to prevent them from hearing their own thoughts in their mind and thinking it's coming from the outside when they recall it? The answer is nothing prevents that. They do it all the time. It's up to the hypnotist, whoever is doing the work, the research, to recognize that immediately. And it takes a lot of time and a lot of experience to be able to do that. But when they say the alien said this and the alien said that, that is the time to be resistant. That is the time to know that this is a very big area of confabulation. It's a red flag area. Be careful, be careful, be careful, be careful. So if people tell you about what aliens said, just be really, 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 really careful with that stuff.
You know, like I said, you're right. We cannot put the scenes of destruction and the jobs at the same time. But can you tell us what some of the jobs that they are trained to do?
Well, this is now, I'm slightly revising my concepts of this. You know, everybody's learning these things on the fly. And there's certain things around Secret Life that I would change that I feel embarrassed to even put in because I thought that they were right at the time, but then I've learned more. And in the threat, I would have fine-tuned some things. I would have changed a few things as well. It's all brand new. We're all learning this. It's brand new. You know, and nobody's ever learned this in the history of humankind. So it's the same thing with jobs. People are given tasks, and oftentimes the tasks are helping hybrid children on board the object. And one of the things that I've noticed, for example, is that when children are play with hybrid children, now this is not a task, but it relates to it, they play with toys. And I wrote an article on hybrid toys that appeared in International UFO Review some time ago, now a defunct magazine, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But even to be able to write an article on hybrid toys is kind of amazing to me, anyway, that I could even do something like that. Not that I was special, but that there's enough information there to write an article about. And the toys are unusual in that these toys are mind controlled, mind operated. So you get these little 5-year olds who can lift a ball up into the air and then have the ball come down and catch it. And abductee children learn that they can do the same thing. that first they say, oh, I can't do that. How do you do that? Yeah, I can't do that. And the little kids will say, yes, you can do that. Just try, just try. So they try and they try, and then they learn that they can do that. And this happens with older kids as well. And then this happens with adults too, in getting things to move and all that. And I've been this is one of my latest little brain storms, if I use that word. What is the meaning of that? Now, in the meantime, abductees are doing tasks too. They're training people on how to correctly hold a baby, how to correctly put a bottle in a baby's mouth, or how to feed a baby from the breast. They're training them on how to wear regular clothes, white clothes with what, on how to tie shoelaces, on how to do all the things that that kids learn here, but these are older. These might be teenagers. They're training them how to stand in line. Let's just say 12 or 14-year-olds or teenagers, how hybrids should stand in line waiting for something, like at a school cafeteria. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Do you think that all humans are capable of unlocking those powers in our mind? I mean, it's a standard fact that we only use a small portion of our brain, right?
Well, there's been a retrenchment of that. Most people can learn a lot more than they know, but we pretty much use what we're given, and it's all there ready for use, you know, and it's got a function. But it's, you know, it's. I don't think all humans can be abductees. I really don't. I think that abductees, in some way, have something different about them. That's why it's intergenerational. And I'm not gonna. I'm still playing with what exactly is different. But I've got some logical concepts that will fill that in. But maybe I'll write an article about that too. And get everybody to hate me, but
no, they won't hate you. People appreciate the truth.
Well, maybe not.
Well, trailblazers are always attacked a little bit, you know.
Well, that makes me
mainstream science,
and that makes me a cheap trailblazer. I'll say that. I've been attacked every which way but up, and the fact is, though, that it is, you know, you are, you sort of blindly trying to work your way through this, Preston. It's you know, it's there's no guideposts, there's no guidelines, there's no nobody to train you. I mean, even Bud and I were basically learning at the same time, even though he started before I did, and I learned from him, and then I changed, and he changed, and so forth. And
have John, you had any evidence? Have you had any evidence that the ETs are aware of your research or know what you're doing?
If, in fact, there are hybrids on the ground, that is to say, if there are hybrids moving into apartments, for example, if that is true, and I have no reason to believe it's not true since I've heard it from various people.
Oh, I think it's true, yeah.
Then what has happened is security to protect them has gone sky high and above. Before this happened, which I first began to see in 2003, 10 years ago, before this happened, people would tell these beings, I'm remembering everything and I'm telling it to Dave Jacobs. And the aliens or the hybrids would say, don't do that. That's not good. You're endangering future generations. That's not good. Don't do that. Now get up on the table. And that would be the end of it. Now, and I'll be writing a book about this. Now, it's a whole other ball game. Now that there's feet on the ground, now security is sky high, and now an abduction researcher might really become a serious threat to them. I mean, a serious threat if the abductee is telling them everything about what they're doing, which has happened to me a couple of times. And I must say, it scared the hell out of me, put it bluntly. But I knew that this was, we are, this is not your father's abduction phenomenon, so to speak. this is a whole other ballgame now. Now if they are actually, or now it's we're in a different level, and when I write my book about it, you'll see what I mean. But nothing has happened to me personally as far as I know.
Dr. Jacobs, we are down to the last minute of the show, and I just wanted to tell everyone once again where to find your books. Again, they're on Amazon. Just look for author David Jacobs. Go to his website, ufoabduction.com, and also Preston's. Go on PrestonDennett.com, and you'll see his library of books. And for any of you who've captured anything amazing out there, we'd like to see it. We'd like to see the footage, so send it to us, Third Phase of Moon. And make sure you say it's for the Revolution Radio Contest. The winners of the two categories will receive an autographed book, one from Preston, and the other category would be for an entity. So one, we'd like to see a UFO. The other, we'd like to see an entity, a ghost, an alien, a being, interdimensional being, you name it, whatever. Stills or videos. Just send them to us via Skype, Third Phase of Moon. And once again, we're about to close out. Any last thoughts, Dr. Jacobs? If you had one last message that you could fit into the viewers or the listeners of who are going to see, hearing this live and who are going to be watching this down the road on YouTube, what would you have to say?
One word. Run! No, just a joke. I just think that this is a subject that it shouldn't be me who's doing this. I'm not the one to do this. I've done this for 25 years. I'd love to train other people to do it, et cetera, but there's so little interest in it. It's so steeped in ridicule. And yet, in my mind, it's actually happening. I just hope that the scientific and academic community will listen to this conversation, and maybe one other person out there will be attracted to it, and maybe he or she will attract other people to it. But I know that that's not going to happen, because the ridicule is so great that it's a career destroyer. If anybody gets involved with it, it's all downside.
You know what, though, Doctor? On the other end, the younger generation is far more open-minded. You know, I'm the black sheep in the family in the sense that I actually, believe, have an open mind, looked at the evidence, see everything there, and they still won't believe it. But now we got this Kepler telescope, which is looking out into the heavens.